Steinberg, Kerr. The Big Show on Sportsnet 960. Brought to you by the Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to the cave.
Hey, it's Kelly Kirsch. Happy Tuesday. Pat Steinberg in at 2 o'clock. Jays baseball on the radio just after 5 as they open up a homestand against the Los Angeles Angels. I still call them the California sometimes. That's just me. There's a lot of information with Matt Rose and his update there. A lot of stuff in case you missed it. Let's see. Jamie Benn not going to play in the World Cup. Kevin Pillar in, Maddie. What else? You had Dez Bryant out?
Yeah, Dez Bryant with concussion, although it doesn't sound like it's too serious.
Cody Ceci signed, the man that could have been and should have been a Flame.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Cody Ceci, the young 22-year-old, gets a 2-year deal. There's plenty going on today.
Lots.
Especially Kevin Pillar coming back. There was a lot to go through there.
Lots happening. We're a busy, busy day today. Coming up at about 1:25 or so, we're going to put him back to work. Brad Kerrell, the voice of the Calgary Hitmen, right here on Sportsnet 960. It's been a while since Rob Kerr, Pat Steinberg, and myself were up in Red Deer hanging out with our Sportsnet crew for the MasterCard Memorial Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. Lots has happened. And in case you missed it, we have the top 10 stories in order of appearance that you probably don't know or maybe forgot unless you're a hardcore Western League fan. If you're a casual fan, it'll be a great catch-up for you. We'll have that coming up at 1:25. Three burning questions. It's going to be neat. We were going to get some more production to it, but we decided just to go with what we have.
Yeah, I think this week's going to be quick. I think the Brad Kerrell thing is going to be... That's going to take up some time. I'm sure he's got plenty of good stories to tell. Then we'll have a quick little three burning questions to wrap up the 1 o'clock hour before we're joined by the legend himself, Pat Steinberg.
Pat Steinberg in at 2 o'clock. Adam VanCouverden. Mm. He announces his retirement. That's it. No more competition. He is an Olympian big time. Former flag bearer for Team Canada. Really articulate guy. Really neat. He's 34, which is like a geezer in Olympic competition when you come to that. He started in Athens. He caught up with Andrew Walker from Sportsnet 590, and they had kind of an all-encompassing little chat, so we thought we'd play that because just like the way this guy talks, and I love his he's just really, really forthright. Here's Adam VanCouverden with the one and only Andrew Walker from earlier today.
They got off to a quick start in the pool. Our women in the pool were just incredible. And we just had so much momentum. You know, everybody on the team just felt like we were part of something bigger than our event. And that's a great way to have an Olympics go. I've been to 4 for Canada, and they've all been different. And this Olympics is really, really special in a lot of ways. And I'm so happy for everybody on the Canadian team, and particularly for the athletes bringing home medals, because it was an amazing games on so many levels for Canada.
It was funny. I enjoyed following your Twitter account because I think at these things, a lot of athletes, especially around the time they're competing, they just kind of lock it in and they focus, and maybe they worry about everything else, social media or writing or whatever before, after. And maybe it's because you've been to so many of these things. It felt like you were in a spot where, you were embracing, the entire team, and you were a bit of a cheerleader and all of that.
Well, thanks. I certainly am one of the veterans. So, I might approach it a little bit differently, but social media is kind of omnipresent now. And I think it's more of a distraction for me to ignore things like that. I also find writing really therapeutic, and it's a good way to, kill some time for me. And when something's in my mind, the best way for me to articulate it is just to put it into some words. So very often I write something down and I don't send it or publish it or put it on my blog or tweet it or anything like that. But when something, good comes off my fingers onto the keyboard, I think people are interested in reading it. And so a couple of times during these games, I decided to send my notes off to, one news agency or another, usually CBC, and they're more than happy to publish those words. And, maybe it has something to do with, I went to Sochi as a member of the broadcasting group with CBC, and
yep,
I was writing a lot then and really, really engaged. So perhaps it kind of changed my view of the Olympics a little bit in terms of how I view it as not just an athlete and as a fan, but also somebody with a bit of a voice and somebody who has opinions and wants to share them. So, it's been an interesting journey for me. And I think back to Athens, and I was 22 years old when I went to Greece to my first Olympics. I didn't even bring my computer because we didn't have Wi-Fi back then. We didn't have, I didn't have a cell phone that would work in Europe. We were totally disconnected. Me and my coach just played Scrabble for a couple of weeks.
Olympic champion Adam Vancouverden joins us on the Andrew Walker Show. Yeah, I read your stuff on CBC. I read the article, you know, that was linked to the, it was on your blog and linked to the Huffington Post as well. And I do want to get into that. I want to talk about you first, though. This was your last Olympics, and it was a real good, you know, piece you penned on the emotion of your last race and how you were. I mean, you did not qualify for the final, which was a bit of a surprise. So you had the consolation final, and you kind of, well, how did you describe it? You kind of changed your mindset on this race, and it wasn't that long before the race that it came to you.
No, I did a few things differently, and first to you know, take full accountability for my semifinal. I messed up, and I didn't have a great race. I don't know if that first stroke would have gotten me into the final. I suspect it probably wouldn't have. I've been racing a long time, and I can catch up. When the speed is, you know, at the level where I can catch up. But that semifinal wasn't worth a final, and I didn't earn my place in that final. So unfortunately, my sixth try at the Olympic final, I didn't make it, but, happy to say that I have raced in that final a couple of times. But right before that B final, I remember looking down the race course. We're about a minute to start. You know, I adjusted my warm up. I got there a little bit later. I was pretty relaxed, and I had talked to a few friends, before heading down to the water about, you know, what it's like racing an Olympic B final. And I was just trying to compose myself. And it wasn't until 60 seconds before the start, I looked down the race course. I saw the beautiful vista in front of me. I saw the Olympic fans. I saw this Olympic course. I looked across. There was, you know, three guys to my left and four guys to my right who, you know, are all world-class paddlers. And I thought to myself, what an amazing opportunity I have to paddle 1,000 meters because I love it and not because there's any expectation of, oh, Canada getting played if I win or medals given out or, you know, frankly, any of that reward or potential for accolades. I just wanted to do it because it was an opportunity for the purest possible 1,000 I've ever done in my career. And I just kind of smiled and thought, like, yeah, that makes it worth it for me. Like, just the only reward is going to be perfect strokes and the knowledge that I can do them because I happen to be in perfect shape right now. I prepared well for these games. I can tango with anybody on the water, and I did prove that in my semi. So I just kind of wanted to prove it in my B final. And you know, I took 350, what I think of as almost perfect strokes, got my body and my boat down the line as fast as I could, and crossed the finish line first in my last race. And I know it only means ninth. You know, I've been at it long enough to know that I could have done better, but my time was fast.
Yeah.
I felt great. My coach was pleased. I proved that my preparation paid off, and you know, I'm leaving satisfied with just a participation medal.
But it's not just
a participation medal; it is a participation medal. I'm very proud of that.
The time in the B final would have finished second in the A final, and I know, you know, there's this space time continuum. Who knows if the conditions are a little different or the nerves get to you? But it's interesting. Are you proud of that, or deep down do you say, ugh, like of course it would have meddled if I was in that other race?
No, I don't have any resentment. And you're right, like, times don't matter that much in our sport. The race course was changing all the time, so, you know, there's really nothing that I can pull away from that except that it was world class. And you know, I know that on a good day I was prepared to win a medal. And the thing is, at the Olympics, you not only have to have one good day, you have to have back-to-back-to-back good days and good races.
Mm-hmm.
On two good races on one day, and unfortunately for me, it just didn't happen that way. But I'm leaving with something more than I ever imagined, to be honest. I didn't think that I could take as much as I'm taking away from a B-final, consolation final, as you called it, and I am. So I'm very gratified by that experience.
Adam Vancouverden joins us on the Andrew Walker Show, four-time Olympic medalist, world champion, Olympic champion as well. So this is your fourth and final games. You've accomplished literally everything there is to accomplish in the sport. I hope you go out feeling that. Did you approach this games any different? Did you, the last 2 weeks and even now, did you handle things a little differently? Did you take in the sights and the sounds? I don't know, you know, exactly your day-to-day, you know, activities or mindset 4, 8, 12 years ago. How did they compare to this time in Rio?
Well, every Olympics is different, and they, you know, bring with them a different set of experiences and challenges and everything. And this Olympics was no exception to that. My routine was awesome. I didn't have to take a shuttle bus. Usually the Olympics are characterized by how many minutes a day you spend on a shuttle bus. And thankfully we got a hotel very close to the race course. So I brought a bike down with me, and I'm actually just packing my bike box up to bring it back to Toronto. And I bike to the race course every day, which was great. I just, you know, stuck my earbuds in nice and quietly, put my helmet on, and rode on the bike trail right to the lake. And that was really, really calming for me. And, you know, just was part, it's part of my routine back home. And I was happy that I could do that here. And I did, like, really soak it in. I reminded myself a couple of times throughout this Olympics just to really enjoy it, keep my eyes open and to, you know, breathe in all that the Olympics has to offer. But all that said, you know, this is my last Olympics competing as an athlete, but I hope to contribute to the Canadian Olympic movement in other ways in the future. And I fully expect to be in Pyeongchang and in Tokyo and wherever Beijing, I guess, is in 2022. I hope to be part of the Canadian Olympic team in another way. So, you know, I'll... people are saying goodbye like I'm never going to see them again, but I'm not running into this forest. So. Don't put me on an ice floe and, you know, push me out into the ocean just yet.
Well, it was interesting, though, because in your article, too, you called being, you know, a high-profile, high-performance athlete, an Olympic athlete, you called it a selfish endeavor. I've never heard it described that way, but it's very true, because if you're going to be any good at what you do, you got to pour your life into it. What changes for you now in that respect? You're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to. It's still pretty fresh. You know, it's a fresh wound. It's not negative like a wound is, but I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to contribute. But really, I think in the future, my energy will be spent on trying to ensure other people's performances or other people's well-being. And the reason that I refer to it as a selfish endeavor is because, you know, as an athlete, we're focused on our fitness and what we eat and what we do and our races. And it leaves little time to worry about other people. And I think the quote from my blog said, if you're always trying to be first, then you rarely put other people first in your life. And I'd like that to change.
Adam Vancouver,
not about athletes.
Yeah. Adam Vancouver, our guest on the Andrew Walker Show. All right. So vankayak.com is your website, and you post things there. And your article about sexism in sport and at the Olympics got picked up by the Huffington Post, and I read that a couple of times today. And I thought it was really interesting, and these games as a whole, this was an issue that came up, and I agree with pretty much everything you said, but I think it's an important conversation to have. There were a lot of people writing about sexist remarks. And I don't know if it was because it was an Olympic Games that really felt like it was highlighted by all these female athletes, especially in the States, especially with our country. Our women just carried the mail. But Adam Creek from CBC, I mean, he took some heat for comments directed at Eugenie Bouchard, intentional or not. And you certainly weighed in on them.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, I'll kick it off by saying I know Adam Creek really, really well, and we're great friends. And I refer to him as my friend in the article. And I don't believe, and I know that Adam Creek is not a sexist guy. And my point is that when we make mistakes, men and women, and everybody, we should feel comfortable having our mistakes critiqued, and we shouldn't take them personally. And thankfully, Adam has not taken it too personally, and you know, he apologized for his remarks in his own way. And we've all grown up and matured a little bit, or at least we've educated ourselves, or, you know, it's a learning experience for everyone. People often think that sexism has to be like blatantly offensive, and it's not. It doesn't have to be. I think, you know, there's latent sexism in so much of what we do. And the problem is that we tend to gloss over it and just say, well, that's the way it is. And it's normal to refer to a female athlete's appearance before we talk about her performance. And we just don't do that with males. So just on the basis of there being a big difference between how we report on male athletes and how we report on female athletes, that is inherently sexist. We all grew up in an inherently sexist society that, treats women differently than men. And a lot of men chimed in and said, well, there's reverse sexism, and if we start doing that, then, you know, men are going to suffer. Well, I don't really care, to be honest. I just think things should be equal. I think everybody has got to, you know, check their biases every once in a while. Consider from an unbiased perspective the language that we use and the attitudes that we have and some of the biases that we carry around and the stereotypes that exist in our society, and start growing up a little bit. And, you know, if it takes a humbling experience for somebody to have to hear, you know, I think you were wrong in that situation, then I'd encourage anybody that receives that type of feedback to just take a moment, take it in, and you know, accept it. If a woman says that she was slightly offended by something that you said or did, then that was sexism, regardless of what you think, as a man or a woman. You know, if you've offended somebody, then, you know, people like to say, I don't care about political correctness. Well, you don't have to care about political correctness just to be a considerate person. And if your stereotypes are having an impact on other people, as a lot of journalists are, then we just have to think about them and be humble enough to accept that we can change.
Yeah, it's something you have to think about. It's something that I have to think about too, because I looked at Adam, and again, your quote from your piece, I don't think Adam's a sexist man, but I recognize that we all grew up in an inherently sexist world, and we carry around biases and stereotypes that play into a recurrently sexist rhetoric. But also at the same time, I mean, and not to say he's inexperienced at what he does, but Adam is not Ron McLean. He's not a 30-year Olympic host. I mean, I do three hours of live radio a day. It's a lot of talking, and you do your best to pore over everything you say and all the nuances to make sure you're not accidentally saying something that's off color or can be misconstrued. But sometimes you get into conversations like this, and it's inevitable that, you know, someone will hear something that they want to hear and tweet in, and you know how it goes. But you're right. It is about being adaptable and like you saw the article kind of out, like I'm sure listing off all the sexist things that were said on different broadcast outlets. Do you happen to see that?
Yeah, and it was incredible.
You know,
I'm not saying that we have to work so hard to avoid ever saying something like that. It's okay if we use the wrong word sometimes. But one of the reasons that I actually wrote the article wasn't really what Adam said on the air. It was his reaction to people on Twitter, and particularly Marnie McBean, Anna Mae Pierce, and Chandra Crawford, who are three incredible female Olympians who are leaders in their community. And like in the case of Chandra Crawford, she started a company, an organization, a not-for-profit called Fast and Female that, you know, does a lot for young female athletes in Canada. So she's kind of an expert on sexism, and she's experienced a heck of a lot more than any white male athlete will ever. So, you know, I just think that it's important to recognize when we've made a little mistake, and if somebody calls you out, be okay with it and say thanks for pointing it out, because it's actually, you know, it's like somebody telling you that you have food in your teeth. Like, you should thank them, not be offended.
Yeah, we had Anna Mae on a couple weeks ago. I just looked at that, and it surprised me, the list of things like this was said and this was said and this was said, and some of them were cringeworthy. Some of them are egregious and maybe accidental, but hey, they happen. And some, like my struggle with this is that sometimes I do think that we do look too hard for this stuff, and I know it exists. But for instance, like Dana Vollmer was the USA swimmer. She recently gave birth, and you know, she wins multiple medals. Her website, you know, is marketed "Mama on a Mission," like that's what it says. And yet, you know, the announcers that or the headlines that would reference her being a mother, people were very angry about it, and I didn't necessarily see the merit in that.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of cherry pick a little bit. I'm not suggesting you're cherry picking, but not everything is offensive. And when people start like going out and looking for it, you know, we might be trying a little bit too hard. But if somebody is offended, then it's worth looking at. And maybe those people weren't aware of the fact that she was actually probably working with an Olympic sponsor. It was all based on moms. Like in 2012, I worked with Procter & Gamble on the Thank You Mom campaign. So, you know, another female athlete too, or moms, also did. So, you know, sometimes try a little bit too hard, but if it's stimulating conversation, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Adam Vancouver and our guest on the Andrew Walker Show. So like I said, it was our women carrying the mail for us early, especially in these games and in your four Olympics. And you know what? I already know the answer to this. Have you seen something quite like Penny Oleksiak, a 16-year-old, just taking these games by storm for our nation?
No, there's never been an athlete like Penny Oleksiak. She's an absolute phenom. Her talent and her ability to perform under pressure repeatedly is completely unprecedented, not just in Canada, but I think globally. And she's a superstar. And we're so lucky to have her, and I hope she keeps swimming and keeps swimming as fast as she can. You know, I just think about what her year is going to be like. She's going to get a driver's license and go back to grade 11, and she's quoted as talking about having to do a math exam this summer. It's just terrible, man. She's another kind of person, I guess. She's just really, really, like, what an amazing thing for young swimmers to look up to, you know? Like, that, just the sky's the limit.
There you go. Adam Vancouverden guesting with we still call him ours, Andrew Walker, used to work here on the morning show, now out in Toronto. Neat chat. Both guys kind of being pretty honest about some of the stuff they saw and read, and neat to see. I don't think I know you haven't heard the last of Adam Vancouverden. You know he's going to be part of whether it's a Kurt Harnett kind of role maybe in Olympics to come, or something bigger with the Canadian Olympic Association or not. But I mean, he's just too smart and too articulate of a guy not to have on our side and keep things going. And he talked about that, how how, you know, training for the Olympics is very selfish, and now it's going to be kind of obviously completely different, where he's going to help other people. And I think that's fantastic. Wanted to play that one for you guys. Coming up, we've got three burning questions about 145, as Matt Rose has been working like a dog to come up with three of the most interesting questions of the day today. We'll find out what those are coming up. But I wanted to kind of go back to school a little bit with the Western Hockey League. We're so proud to cover that league right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Coming up on September the 10th, it's our first game. It's a preseason game at the Saddle Dome, as the Hitmen will take on the Edmonton Oil Kings. We'll have that one for you. We'll have a lot of games, obviously, all winter long. Brad Curl, the longtime voice of the Calgary Hitmen, I put him to work. I said, come up with a list of the top 10 things that happened between, well, the finish of the MasterCard Memorial Cup and right now. Because there's lots of stuff. People on holidays, maybe you're not totally focused in on that league during the summer, but it was busy. We're going to check in with Curly. We're also going to find out what's going on with him on Saturday. Got a special show right here on Sportsnet 960 with the Hitmen coming up on Saturday afternoon. And a few other things as well. We'll get to that coming up next. Sportsnet 960, it is the big show for the Comedy Cave.
Text 960-960 anytime to contact, chirp, applaud, agree, or disagree with Sportsnet 960. And by the way, keep it clean or clean enough. The Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
Oh yeah, Kelly Kirsch in for Pat Steinberg. Pat is in for Rob Kerr. He's coming at 2 o'clock. 5:07 first pitch. Jays back home at the Rogers Centre, Toronto. They start a series with the Los Angeles Angels. That'll be interesting when they get to six games against teams that are garbage this year. The Angels and Twins. So time to make a little bit of hay. Want to switch gears a little bit, talk about the Calgary Hitmen. As a few things happening with the Calgary Hitmen, including a special show that we'll get to a little bit later on Saturday. With the voice of the Calgary Hitmen for a long time now, the one and only Brad Curl. Brad, how are you today? Tell me everything.
You know, the fact that I get to come on your program with you makes it a great day. Yeah, how could it not be?
I thought so. Now, how into the San Francisco Giants are you? Are you like totally on the bandwagon? Do you have any room in your heart for the Blue Jays? What's happening with that?
Hey, bandwagon? No. Since the days of back of Candlestick Park, I've been a Giants fan. But yes, you know, I got some room for the Blue Jays,
okay,
for sure.
Okay,
you
know, there we go.
Giants are in the National League, Blue Jays in the American League, and who can not be excited about the Blue Jays this year? I mean, they're in contention once again. I mean, everyone's talking about the offseason and who may or may not be back, but forget about next year. Let's talk about this year, and I like their team a lot.
Yeah. Hey, news out of the Hitmen camp, single game tickets go on sale tomorrow.
Yeah, 10 a.m. tomorrow. So all 36 home games will be available to the public. You can go to Ticketmaster, or if you want, you come down to the Saddle Dome. Go to the box office, go right to the window, and they'll hook you up. And that's for all 36 home games, including the home opener. And Kelly, that's 1 month from today.
Yeah.
23rd, and another big game for us this year, of course, is the annual Teddy Bear Toss. And this one is just a spectacle. If you've never been to it, a marvelous cause behind the scenes where fans bring teddy bears to the rink, throw them on the ice when the Hitmen score their first goal, and all those bears will be shared by more than 50 local agencies. And this year's game, first chance to get tickets to this one, is actually in November this year. It's Saturday, November 26th. That's a 2 o'clock start, and I would advise anyone who has interest in this game to get their tickets tomorrow when they go on sale, because last year's game sold out. So yeah, it's a real community partnership with the Hitmen and also the fans themselves, because without them, there wouldn't be any teddy bears. And Calgary just opens their hearts and their wallets for this game, and it's a real winner.
It is very cool. Now, it is a Saturday, and it's November 26th, so that's a little bit different, kind of neat, and it's good to know that, against the Lethbridge Hurricanes. And I guess you guys are pretty proud to get a new partner on board, as you got a big gunner to help you guys out with this one.
Yeah, the Brick has come on board as our title sponsor of this game, and just a real terrific fit. They're an organization who believes in giving back into the community, so they're going to have a charitable aspect to this game as well. So it's a lot of fun. I know a lot of fans that may say, hey, I only come to one game a year, but I got to make it the Teddy Bear Toss. So it's a game that I think goes beyond hockey, as we spoke about earlier. It's got a charitable tie to it. So just a fantastic day, and of course, yeah, Brent Kissio will bring his Lethbridge Hurricanes into town. So not only a great cause and a great event, but should be a terrific hockey game as well on November 26th against the Hurricanes.
So for folks looking for tickets, obviously you can head down to the box office or go online or phone or whatever. They got the name your game flex packages, season tickets, single game tickets. You get it all. They'll make sure that they get you set up. That's how that's going to go. So we encourage people to do that. But I wanted to put you to work. I was thinking about this because I've been kind of, you know, you get little dribs and drabs of Western Hockey League news kind of in the summertime, and it kind of goes into your brain, and maybe it stays there, and maybe you forget about it. But we've come up with Brad Curl's top 10 stories in the Western Hockey League since the MasterCard Memorial Cup was handed out in Red Deer. It just seems like yesterday, me and Rob Kerr and Pat Steinberg were up there with the Sportsnet crew, and here we are getting ready for a new season. So why don't you start us off, Brad, at number 10 as we go to the West Coast, the team that I guess earlier announced that they were changing arenas, but more news in Vancouver.
Yeah, no, not only will the Vancouver Giants now play out of the Langley Event Center, but they will have a new head coach. And you could almost see this one coming. A team that on the ice last year struggled. There are 22 teams in the Western Hockey League. They finished 21st, won only 23 of 72 games. Lauren Mullican, the former head coach, was dismissed. Now, I would argue that not all of it was Lauren's fault. They had some issues with health as well, most notably Tyler Benson, who was an absolute stud back in his minor hockey days. You think back, Kelly, he had 146 points in only 36 games in his final year of AAA Bantam. He went number one overall in the Bantam draft, and there was a lot of thought that this would be a player you could build around, but Benson only played in 30 of 72 games last year. So Lauren Mullican was shown the door as the head coach. Not only that, they have a new general manager, and yeah, one of my off-season stories to watch would be Jason McKee, the new head coach of the Vancouver Giants, and he's got some ties to Alberta. 37 years old, he was the head coach and general manager of the Spruce Grove Saints of the AJHL for the last 6 years, including a two-time AJHL Coach of the Year, and he's the hire of Glenn Hanlon, who takes over in the general manager's chair. And of course, Glenn, a terrific hockey mind. Not only was he a former player in the WHL, but he was a head coach in the NHL with Washington, an assistant coach with the Canucks, and he becomes the second GM in Vancouver. So it's up to McKee and Hanlon to see if they can right the ships of the Vancouver Giants.
It's been a while for the Vancouver Giants when you think of, you know, the Lance Boma and Milan Lucic and all the guys that went through that program. It's sort of dried up over the last couple of years, hey, Brad?
It certainly has, and I think that was a big reason for the organization deciding to change venues. The Pacific Coliseum is an expensive venue to run, and I know a lot of the talk around Vancouver was could they survive in that building, and I think they ultimately came to the point and discovery is that, you know, the team hasn't been that great. Their attendance has been sliding since that era that you spoke of, and they looked for a cheaper option in Langley, and it sounds like Langley is going to be a terrific fit. Their initial reaction from the season ticket base appears as though they have a legitimate shot to sell out that venue. So a lot of excitement in Vancouver, but again, I would suggest that a lot of it is around Tyler Benson. If he can be healthy, I like their chances of making a step forward this year and out of the basement of the league.
The top 10 off-season stories for the Western Hockey League, and now number 9 will stay in the beautiful province of British Columbia up the road in Prince George. Something, another change going on there.
Yeah, and this one was a tough one for the Prince George Cougars. You look at the standings in November, and the Cougars were right in contention, even into January, for second place in the division, and then it just went off the rails. They decided to fire their head coach, Mark Hollick, after being swept in the first round by the Seattle Thunderbirds, so they go the pro route. Former NHL defenseman Richard Matvichuk has been introduced as the head coach in Prince George, the 12th head coach in the history of the franchise, and the Cougars have had some lean years, Kelly. They haven't made it past the first round of the playoffs in 10 seasons. They went through an ownership change, but it really seems as though that Matvichuk is the guy for the job. Originally selected 8th overall by, how about the Minnesota North Stars back in 1991. Yeah, 14 seasons in the National Hockey League for Matvichuk. No stranger to the WHL. 3 seasons he is a player with the Saskatoon Blades. So he's been in the boots of the players that he'll now coach, and it seems as though at the age of 43 he's ready for this job.
Okay, so he takes over in PG. Now, coming up on June 23rd, we found out the Saskatoon Blades, who have really, they're another team that's been struggling, they found replacements after they lost their coach and GM to the National Hockey League.
Yeah, it was not that long. It was only 2 years, as a matter of fact, for Bob Woods, who came in as the head coach and general manager. But when the NHL calls, it's tough to say no, and he did not. An assistant coach now with the Buffalo Sabres. And you mentioned the Blades' struggles. They missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. Of course, a big part of that was hosting the MasterCard Memorial Cup in 2013. They had to pay some big prices to bring in some prizes, including Braden Schenn, who they wooed out of Brandon. The price was not cheap. And as a result, they've been rebuilding ever since. Now, the Blades, unlike these previous organizations we spoke about that go from without to hire, they go within. They promote their assistant coach, Dean Brockman, and also an intriguing move in the general manager's chair as well as Colin Priestner, who is a managing partner of the Blades. His dad actually owns the franchise and is a former WHL goalie. Colin becomes the new general manager, and he's a youngster. He's only 32 years old, but you talk to people in Saskatoon, he's been behind the scenes for some time. Woods focusing on the ice, and Priestner's been a lot of the work behind the scenes guiding the team through the previous three Bantam drafts, but at age 32, that's an extremely young general manager, so there'll be a lot of critics' eyes on Mr. Priestner to see if he can get the job done in Saskatoon.
Well, yeah, that looks a little weird, right? Like obviously nepotism, people start thinking about that, but I guess
exactly,
but it's his team. I guess he can do whatever he wants with it. Okay, now on the 15th of June, the Western Hockey League announced a rule change for this season that a lot of people are maybe taking note of. Tell us about it.
Well, if you think who has the most thankless job in hockey, and that would probably be the referee. And what you want to do is you want to make their job easier, and you want to take judgment calls out of the equation. I think the Western Hockey League has done that. What they've done is they've clarified the puck off the skate rule. And it kind of sounds boring on the surface, but if I said to you, you can now kick the puck in the net anywhere outside the crease, that might get your attention.
Yep.
Well, that's exactly what's happened in the Western Hockey League. A player can now kick the puck in the net as long as it's outside the blue paint. And some might argue, well, you're going to turn hockey into soccer. Well, I would say to you, pick up a hockey stick, shoot the puck, or kick it, which is going to go faster and more accurately.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. That hockey stick is still going to be preference number one, but it eliminates, and you often see it, I don't want to say it's a play a game, but fair to say maybe there's a play a week where the puck goes in to the net off someone's skate and everyone decides, did he kick it? Was he turning? What was his intention? You don't really know, and anyone who's played the game, Kelly, knows that this game happens so fast, you don't have time to stop and think, okay, do I want to kick this or direct this or how does it work? That eliminates all of that out of the situation. You can now kick the puck in. I know I talked to a couple of goaltenders around the Western Hockey League who are they're taking a casual approach. I mean, obviously player safety is the big thing here. You don't want goalies reaching to cover a puck and with a potential to get stepped on by a skate. But I think the Western Hockey League has handled this well, saying the crease belongs to the goalie. You can't kick pucks there, but anything outside the crease could be kicked in. Be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I got like a million quite. We could do a whole segment on that.
We could. What's your initial thought?
I think it's dumb.
You do, hey?
Yeah, I just, you know, how would you like to see the Western Hockey League Championship decided by someone kicking the puck into the net in overtime?
See, I'm okay with that, provided it's in the rule book. And, I mean, you look back to, was it the Dallas Stars
yeah.
and the Buffalo Sabres and the goal that was allowed?
No, we've never heard of that. Don't ask Rhett Warner about that.
Exactly. So I think if it's in the rule book, and this one, what do we have right now in hockey? We have a scoring issue, and we also have a critical issue where people are, how did they mess up that call? I think you take judgment out of this, and I like this rule, at least for a test driver for this year. I don't think it's going to be you know, something that coaches are going to scheme around and we're going to see kicking all over the ice. I don't think it'll get to that. So I'm on the different side of fence as you. I want to see how this plays out. I think I don't think it's going to turn into soccer by any stretch.
Well, now I'm curious. Now I really want to see what's going on with that. Okay, number six, on July the 6th, the Kelowna Rockets, a team that is they're run really well.
Yeah.
They've been a good program. They appointed a former NHL captain as their head coach. What's going on in the Okanagan?
Well, Jason Smith, yeah, former captain of the Oilers, the Philadelphia Flyers, more than 1,000 games over 15 years in the NHL, and most recently, I think this is a terrific hire for Kelowna, an assistant coach with the Ottawa Senators the past 2 years. Now, this was an interesting move that they made the move in the first place to have a vacancy, Kelly, because the Rockets, they were number 3 overall in the regular season in the WHL, 100 points. ironically, they ran into the monster that was the Victoria Royals, who ironically had more points than Kelowna. So the Battle of the Titans came in the second round of the playoffs, and Kelowna ultimately loses that series. And Bruce Hamilton said at the end that maybe that wasn't a great fit, called it a mutual parting of the ways with head coach Brad Ralph. So Jason Smith comes in and basically picks up what Ralph didn't have, and that's that playing pedigree at that elite level. And for the Rockets, third head coach in as many years, you think back to Ryan Huska, who of course is now the bench boss of the Flames AHL affiliate in Stockton, then to Brad Ralph, and now Jason Smith. So Smith has all the pedigree in the world as a player. We'll see how he does as a head coach, and he'll inherit a very good roster in Kelowna.
What, Curly, what was he doing between, like, I know he played a long time in the NHL. What was he coaching somewhere? What was Jason
yeah, most
doing?
Recently Ottawa Senators the last right. 2 years as an assistant coach. So 42, former WHL player as well, played for the Regina Pats before going on to the NHL with Jersey, Toronto, Edmonton, Philadelphia, and Ottawa, and retired from the NHL in 2008-09 and then joined the Senators organization right after it. First player in development in the past two seasons as an assistant coach. So he's got some coaching experience to go with that impressive playing yeah. career. And of course, being a captain, that's a proven leader, which makes you a great coach.
For sure. And originally from Calgary, as I
yeah,
do recall.
Indeed.
There you go. Now, I actually heard about this one on July 21st. I was kind of back in the homeland, and they were jumping up and down about this big news in Swift Current. Well,
yes, huge news in Swift Current. They lose their longtime head coach and their general manager, Mark Lamb. Seven seasons with the Broncos. He's moved on to the American Hockey League to take over the reins of the Arizona Coyotes affiliate in Tucson. Now, who replaces him? Well, again, you go to a former player, and it's Emmanuel Viveros. Yep. He's the new head coach and director of player personnel in Swift Current. Significant experience in hockey. And the one thing about Viveros that you may not have known about, because the name probably doesn't jump out yet at you, because he didn't play in the Western Hockey League since the 1980s. He was the player of the year in the mid-80s, but he's been doing a lot of his coaching since a player over in Europe. And probably the biggest notable part of Viveros' resume is he was the head coach of the Austrian men's team that guiding them to qualify for the Sochi Olympics back in 2014. So Viveros has a lot of coaching experience, but it's a tough market, as you would know, Kelly. Swift Current is a small market. They don't exactly, as a matter of fact, one of the smallest markets in all of the Canadian Hockey League. Just over 15,000 people live in Swift Current, and they've missed the playoffs the last couple of years. So Viveros takes over a program that, if you talk to people in Swift Current, they thought that Mark Lamb did a terrific job of building up the talent pool. So I think the Broncos will be ready for a step forward, and Viveros gets the reins.
So you go from Austria to Swift Current.
Do you think it'll be a little different?
That might be a tough sell. I don't know if I could get my wife to do something similar. Hey, here's an idea.
Well, he did play in Prince Albert. His wife is from Saskatchewan
okay.
as well. So it's not as big a sell as you might think.
Okay, there we go. All right. Stuff happening in Regina. They make a deal for a first-rounder who may or may not play for the Pats. A bit of a gamble.
Yeah, John Paddock, who's the head coach and general manager, and you talk to some people around the Western Hockey League, and he's gone about doing things a little bit differently. The most recent one that I've heard of is before training camp starts, he's sending his veteran players off to Shiloh, Manitoba, to do some team building with the Canadian military. So Paddock making a move, acquires Tyson Jost, who was selected 10th overall by the Colorado Avalanche in the 2016 NHL draft, and Jost was spectacular last year in the BCHL with the Penticton Bees. He had 149 points leading to that first-round pick, and many have compared him to the man in charge in Colorado, Joe Sakic. Now, John Paddock saying, hey, it's worth the risk, knowing right now that Jost has committed to the University of North Dakota. But the one wild card in all this, there's two actually, Kelly. One, the Pats, in my estimation, could be the team to beat in the Eastern Conference this year. They have a very good roster. The other, apparently there's a terrific friendship between Sam Steele, who is arguably one of Regina's best forwards, and Tyson Jost. So we'll watch this one as the season goes on. It might be one of those that maybe Jost doesn't come this year, but maybe next year. But the Pats making a move for the rights, at least, for Tyson Jost, and many in the WHL watching this one closely to see whether or not he'll report.
Yeah, because it happens sometimes, right? Sometimes guys will give up their scholarships, but it's rare. You see it once in a while.
It's happened happened a couple of times. You look at Adam Tambellini, who joined the Calgary Hitmen after leaving the NCAA ranks, and even TJ Gagliardi did the same thing when he joined the Hitmen after leaving the NCAA. So it does happen. You're right, it's not an everyday occurrence, but the interesting part in all of this is I've talked to a couple of people, said, hey, because Joe Sakic played in the Western Hockey League, of course, was the star with the Swift Current Broncos and now running the Avalanche, do you think he would have an influence and tell Tyson where to play? And a couple of managers that I talked to said, probably not likely. It'd be something that the player would get to make his choice, but you can best be sure that the Regina Pats are recruiting like heck right now, trying to woo Tyson Jost to join the CHL.
We're chatting with the voice of the Calgary Hitmen, Brad Curl, right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We're going through the top 10 stories you might have missed between the end of the season, the MasterCard Memorial Cup, and now, as we get to story number three. Very interesting, as we haven't heard expansion for a while with the Western Hockey League, and maybe not expansion, maybe a move, but there's a Alberta border city that is very interested in getting into the Western Hockey League.
Yeah, Lloydminster, very, very much interested. There was a proposal that was pitched in the Western Hockey League office in July from the Frog Lake First Nation. It's an entertainment complex and a group that they put together. And what they're building right now, they've unveiled a proposal to build a $100 million entertainment complex in the Lloydminster area. Hotel, convention center, dining, alongside a 7,500-person arena. Now, it's just west of Lloydminster, and Bruce Sims is the project manager for the complex, and he's been very open about it, saying that the highlight for him is the prospect of a Western Hockey League team in that arena, and the idea is to try and attract one, build the facility so they will come, kind of like Field of Dreams. They're not coming unless we build it, so they're going to build this facility. So they went to the Western Hockey League, they met with the commissioner, Ron Robison, and Ron did not close the door, basically saying, we're certainly interested. However, noting at this time, the only option to move a team to the complex is they don't have a plan to expansion right now. So, and this would only happen, Ron clarifying, in the event there was a need for relocation, then they'd consider it. So this is something we'll watch. I know you look at Kootenay, for example, and that's probably an organization that'll be watched very closely with. Their attendance has dwindled. The general manager and the owner, Jeff Chenault, has been very open, saying that that franchise is for sale. They're going to try another season. They're committed to this full season in the Kootenays to see what happens. But I know a lot of people thinking that that franchise might not be long for Cranbrook. Now, I know the mayor of Cranbrook has come out and said publicly, hey, this is basically notice from the ownership group that if we want to keep this team, we have to go out and support it. So I would suggest if there's more empty seats than not, this could be the last season in Cranbrook. Now, I hope from a rivalry standpoint, it isn't, because Calgary and Kootenay, of course, have cooked up a terrific rivalry. And, you know, that little city of Cranbrook loves its hockey for sure. You look at the Niedermeyers who've come out of that city, and it's got a proud history. But at the end of the day, if you're an ownership group and you're not making money and you're losing every year, it's no different than anyone else. You can only ask someone to swallow losses for so long before they either have to sell or fold the franchise. So with the timing of this is very interesting. I'm not saying that the Kootenay Ice will become the Frog Lake Nation or the Lloydminster Ice. I'm not sure. But it's definitely been thrown out there that the Lloydminster area says, hey, if you're looking to move a team, we'd be interested.
Wasn't there a city, Brad, in Washington State? It's got a funny name. They were kind of looking at it somewhere in the middle part of that state. They're kicking around. Did you hear anything about that?
I certainly did. The funny name eludes me. I know someone had said Wenatchee.
Something like that, yeah.
I know Wenatchee, Washington is one that's been talked about. And actually, Hitman prospect Matt Dorsey is from the Wenatchee area, and he says they've got a marvelous arena down there. And I know talking to some people, they thought that maybe adding another team in the United States would not be a bad idea. So there's definitely some interest. I know Winnipeg had some talk at one point. Now, obviously, with the Moose moving back there in the American Hockey League, not likely to happen anytime soon, but for sure there's some definite interest. And I know the other one for fans who might be following would be Nanaimo. I know that the Western Hockey League has expressed some interest that it would be nice to have a second team on Vancouver Island, because logistically, for those unaware, if you play the Victoria Royals, you cannot get off the island that night. You have to wait till the next day. So for the Victoria Royals as a team, they have no games where they return to their home beds after a game. They're always stuck on the mainland before they can get back. So it'd be nice to see a market in Victoria have a second partner in Nanaimo, but they don't have a building. And that's the one thing that maybe this Frog Lake First Nation has over the other communities we talk about, is they're building a building.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. It's one of those things. Back in the 80s, the teams were always flying around and moving around, but
yeah,
it's been pretty stable lately. Brandon, there's a team that keeps putting good teams on the ice, and looks like they're going to have another good one, maybe a potential first-round pick. But a big change as we find out that Kelly McCrimmon decides to take a bit of a leap and do something different and go to Las Vegas.
Yeah, you talk about culture shocks. How about Brandon Manitoba to the bright lights of Las Vegas, Nevada?
Yeah.
But how could you say no if you're Kelly McCrimmon? And this was an interesting one because I know that he was offered a job last season to perhaps join the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he had said not the timing isn't right. He wanted to really stick with this young group that he had built, and boy, the dividends paid off in spades. The Wheat Kings had a marvelous season, and at the end of the day, they are the WHL champions. So it was a terrific stick for McCrimmon because obviously passing up the Toronto opportunity didn't hurt him. Now joining the NHL's franchise in Vegas as the new assistant general manager. And just the resume of Kelly McCrimmon just is one that's envious, I think, in all hockey circles. A three-time winner of the CHL and WHL Executive of the Year. Joined the Wheat Kings back in 1988. Many of us probably had mullets or were back in the day of listening to Aerosmith and Bon Jovi and Motley Crue. He was named the general manager just the following year. Then that wasn't enough. He purchased a third of the ownership of the team in 1992 and assumed the sole ownership in 2000. And as the club's owner and general manager, he's led the Wheat Kings to more wins than any team in the Canadian Hockey League since 1992. That's a big loss in Brandon. He's known as Crim around the WHL, Kelly, and he's more than just a general manager. I mean, it's funny because whenever the Wheat Kings make a trade, the general reaction around the Western Hockey League is, who do they rip off now?
Yeah.
Because Crim just has that reputation of just being an absolute thief at the trade table. And not only that, a terrific coach, more than 400 wins, more than a 640 winning percentage in his time. So that's a big loss for Brandon, but he's going to stay on as the owner. He's promoted his four-year assistant coach, David Anning, to be the head coach there. So turning of the guard in Brandon. But that franchise was teetering. You mentioned a lot of roster or relocation in the 80s, and Brandon was among the teams that weren't doing well. Tell you what, since Kelly McCrimmon arrived on the scene, they've been nothing but a real darling of the WHL.
Yeah, and I imagine they'll be right there again. So that's a neat story. And then we found out one more change, as you know, the Western Hockey League. Not only do they send players obviously to the NHL, referees to the NHL, broadcasters to the NHL, but they also send front office people too. But a change in Spokane.
Yeah, their general manager, Tim Speltz, who'd been on the job for 26 years, he accepts a job as director of Western Area Scouting with the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, the NHL. At the Leafs, Speltz, he'll be involved with scouting efforts in the NHL, the AHL, and the WHL. And he was cut his teeth here in Alberta, general manager of the Medicine Hat Tigers from 1988 to 1990 before arriving in Spokane during the summer of 1990. And in the subsequent 26 years under his leadership, the organization has been nothing short of just excellent. They've won a couple of WHL championships. They've won a pair of Memorial Cups in 1991 and 2008. And additionally, Tim Speltz was honored as the WHL Executive of the Year twice and also won the CHL Executive of the Year once. So that's a big hole to fill. And you look at it, if you want to look at a broader scope, Kelly, around the WHL, because we talked about it tying a top 10 moment since the MasterCard Memorial Cup was handed out in Red Deer. Well, just previous to that tournament, of course, Portland fired their head coach, Jamie Compan, and 2 days after they were swept in the first round by Everett, they brought back Mike Johnston. So 8 of the 22 teams around the WHL going through major changes to the hockey operations with Spokane, Brandon, Swift Current, Kelowna, Saskatoon, Prince George, Vancouver, and Portland. This, I talked to Kelly Kissio, who's the president of hockey operations with the Hitmen earlier today. I said, have you ever seen a summer like this before? He said, never. So terrific that so many people are getting opportunities at a higher level, and at the same time, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out and through the trades and through the behind the bench with a lot of new faces and new blood in the WHL this year.
And you do a ton of work behind the scenes, so people kind of say, what does Curly do all summer? Well, lots, because you got several jobs, you wear several hats there, and we're going to put you to work here coming up on Saturday. Tell us what's going on at Adrenaline Source for Sports.
Well, every year we do basically it's a preview of the WHL season and the Calgary Hitmen. So from 2 until 6, we'll be live at Adrenaline Source for Sports at 9309 McLeod Trail. For two of those hours, between 3 and 5, four members of the Calgary Hitmen will be down demoing, basically working with kids on their shooting skills. They're going to be in the shooting gallery at Adrenaline. It's a fantastic facility in there where you can shoot pucks and test out sticks, so the players will be there to help you out. We don't have the exact name of which players will be there yet. We're still finalizing those details, but we can tell you between 3 and 5. Now, on the radio itself, of course, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, live on location for those 4 hours. We'll not only preview the Calgary Hitmen, but we're going to look around the Central Division. We'll get guests on from all over the division, from Medicine Hat to Kootenay to Lethbridge to Red Deer to Edmonton. Of course, we hope to get the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, Ron Robison, on as well. A little more details on that rule change we talked about, where players can now kick the puck in the net outside the crease, and maybe some talk about relocation and the health of the Kootenay Ice. We'll have, hopefully have the commissioner, Ron Robison, join us. And just an overall preview of the WHL. Training camps, Kelly, have pretty much started in a lot of markets, and for the Calgary Hitmen, they'll open up their training camp this weekend. Friday is rookie camp with fitness testing at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Then they transition out to Don Hartman, a Northeast Sportsplex, for 3 days, or 4 days, actually, from Saturday through till Tuesday. And then the annual intra-squad game takes place at Max Bell Center. That'll be on Wednesday, August 31st, so 1 week from tomorrow. So hockey season is upon us, at least in the Western Hockey League.
Oh, looking forward to it. I think our first game on the radio is on the 10th of September, a preseason game at the Dome as the Edmonton Oil Kings come to town. But for those people who've been just dying to know what's going on in the Western League and the Calgary Hitmen, we'll give you 4 hours worth coming up on Saturday. Brad, appreciate this. It was good stuff. The top 10 stories that you may or may not have heard of during your summertime post MasterCard Memorial Cup till now. You got us caught up. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
There we go. Brad Curl, voice of the Calgary Hitmen, right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Went a little over on that, but I knew I would. That's okay. We're going to get three burning questions coming up next with Matt Rose. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The questions you're asking, the answers you're craving. It's three burning questions on The Big Show, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay. Laid on me. Number one.
We're going to start with the football. Stamps return to practice today.
Uh-huh.
They'll face the Ticats Sunday. That'll be a doozy. I want one key to victory for the Stampeders ahead of this tilt.
I think Bo Levi Mitchell has to really take advantage of that secondary that's been kind of patchwork for the Ticats.
All right, moving on. Logan Couture, named to Canada's World Cup team. He replaces Jamie Benn, who underwent core muscle surgery back in mid-July. My question, do you think he's the appropriate replacement when there's guys like Corey Perry, Ryan O'Reilly, and Taylor Hall available, just to name a few?
Yeah, different body type, eh? Different. Interesting. I would have went with Perry, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I probably would have gone with a guy like Corey Perry. I do understand that Jamie Benn could play center for them, so that's why I might lean towards Ryan O'Reilly a little bit more, because he's very dynamic. He can play all over the ice. But I also don't mind the Couture signing. He was unbelievable when he came back from injury down the stretch at the end of the year. But just, there are some other names out there for sure.
Can hardly wait for that tournament. Going to be awesome. You'll be able to catch it right here on Sportsnet 960. First game, September the 17th. Ha!
That's going to be a doozy. And a final one for you. The Blue Jays open up a fresh series with the Angels today. They get Kevin Pillar back, opening up a six-game stretch against the Twins and Angels. Both those teams sit at the bottom of their respective division. How many games will the Jays win of their next six before they play division rival Baltimore?
Five.
How many should they win?
Six.
But you think they'll win five?
Think they'll win five.
Do you think R.A. Dickey's the one to take the loss tonight?
No, I think they sweep the Twins and, R.A. Dickey drives me nuts, so he's usually one good, one bad, so he's due for a bad one.
Yeah, he starts tonight when the Jays face the Angels. They open up that series 5-10 first pitch. Those are your three burning questions.
Well, that's very, very cool. That was interesting. I do want to mention a couple things. Like my timing is way off here because I went long with Curly because I had too many follow up questions. That's where I went wrong, Matt. Right?
I feel like that was pretty good for the listeners. I feel like those
it was good stuff because there's
stuff we got. Everyone's caught up on the WHL now.
Yeah, I mean people that and there was some like NHL tie-in stuff and you know, there you go. So
yeah, we hit everything. You guys even talked baseball.
Yeah, I guess he's that goofy Giants thing, right? That's just weirdness that he has. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal. September the 7th, we're going to have a bit of a party here at the station, a bit of a shindig. Mm-hmm. Chicken on the Way, which is awesome. They are kind of helping us out. So basically what we're doing is they're going to load us up with lots of fried chicken, lots of coleslaw, lots of fries, the fritters, and we are going to have a bit of a, you know, bit of a party up in our boardroom. And there is method to our madness, because we want people to come down and enter to win on the fan club, because we're also going to pick your brain about the station a little bit too. So there's some stuff that we could probably say on the air, but we're not going to, but off the air and stuff, when it's just the boys, you might get some interesting stuff from Steinberg and Kerr, just saying. So sign up for that September the 7th. It'd be like a 6 o'clock kind of deal. Get some chicken on the way at any of their 5 Calgary locations. Can't go wrong. Calgary's best fried chicken for over 54 years. The aforementioned Pat Steinberg is ready. We'll continue the big show for the Comedy Cave next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.